Welcome to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Your host, Carl Nordgren, will teach you how to take an expansive view on what it means to be creative and entrepreneurial. Carl is an entrepreneur, novelist, and a lifelong student. For 20 years, he has been learning how to help folks grow their creative capacities. Now, here's Carl.
Hello, and welcome to episode 6 of Exploring Your Creative Genius. My name is Carl Nordgren. Here's my email, carl@creativepopulist.com. Please send me any thoughts you have about good ideas for the show, about how to improve it, about subjects you'd like me to talk about. Please do. I'm going to start today with a story. It's one of my favorite stories to tell because it was one of my favorites to experience. I was driving home early one Sunday morning on a two-lane country road. This was in South Durham County. It was low, swampy woods on both sides of the highway, and I looked up ahead, and there were two critters crossing the road, very, very small, using an unusual locomotion. I pulled my truck off to the side of the road. I ran up, and I picked them up, and I found that they were baby snapping turtles, no more than 2 or 3 days old, I'm certain. When I picked them up, one of them totally disappeared inside its shell. The other one stuck its neck out and opened its mouth as if to threaten me. I thought that was so interesting that these two different behaviors occurred. I put them in the front seat of my truck because I knew that there was a place I could drive another 2 or 3 miles, walk into the woods, and find a branch of New Hope Creek, and that's where I would put the turtles, get them far away from the highway. I kneeled down by the side of the creek. I put them right in the water, right near the side of the creek. And folks, within a blink of an eye, they both disappeared. In an instant, they were both gone. One of them burrowed into the soft mud bottom of the creek. One of them darted into the deep, deep, deep water. And I thought, oh my gosh, if I wasn't already on my knees, that would have brought me to my knees. Nature's gracefulness was just so apparent. It was so apparent. It made me so happy. As I walked back to the truck, I was just filled with what I had just seen. And then I realized that there's a lesson here. There's a lesson here. If I asked a question about what does a turtle need to do, what behavior does it need to exhibit in order to get away from a predator, I would have found these two conflicting ideas. But if I asked a different question, I could reconcile these two behaviors by asking a different question, the question of, within a clutch of eggs, what behaviors should be available to baby turtles to maximize the likelihood that most of them will survive. And so ever since then, I've been embracing the power of both. When I find conflicting ideas or solutions, I keep the turtles in mind, and I recall that I can stack these conflicts, these conflicting ideas. I can merge them. I can pick the best from them. I can integrate them. There's ways I can phase them. There's ways to get the power of both of these ideas if I'm asking the right question, thinking about the right strategy. Now I'm going to transition. We're going to pick both back up again, but I'm going to include some more information here first, and we're going to integrate both in with it. And that is that, you know, I've said to you a bunch of times, I champion the term creatively entrepreneurial, but I'm not going to define it for you because I want you to construct your own understanding for you. Since new knowledge isn't consumed, it's produced. Since thinking is better than knowing, says Goethe. So my purpose for this show is to help you develop your personal, multifaceted, multidimensional creatively entrepreneurial capacities so that your situational creative intelligence will be ready to bring just the right facets of who you are as a creative person for just the right circumstances. But I'm not going to just share my ideas for you to build from, but also the ideas of others, and that's what we're going to do today. I'm going to share ideas from two different sources. I'm going to talk about two approaches to creativity from a book that I learned a lot from. And I'm going to have a friend and a very successful screenwriter, Samantha Shadd, share some creative thoughts with you in the final segment. The book is Old Masters and Young Geniuses by David Gallinson, an economics professor from the University of Chicago. He set out to do research to find within major Western culture painters, what was the most productive phase of their careers? Could he quantify that? And he started with two sets of data. He decided he would look at the prices of the pieces, what they sold for, and then he would look at the frequency with which plates of these pieces were reproduced in 65 art history texts published in English and French since the 1960s. As he did his research, he found something he wasn't looking for, but discovered that there was a natural divide that it was clear that some of these artists discovered what they were going to paint while painting it, and some constructed very precise plans for a specific objective for this painting before they got started. Does someone just get started with little or no planning, guiding what is emerging, or are detailed plans in place before one gets started? He focuses in his book on Picasso and Cézanne. Picasso was a famous planner. When he had a radical vision, and he had a few of them, didn't he? A radical vision either for the completed work or the process that will produce the work, he modeled it. He planned it. For instance, he created over 100 sketches for Les Damoiselles d'Avignon. And he said, "I don't seek, I find." And only after he knew what he was going to do did he get started. Cézanne, on the other hand, was a seeker and fully embraced that he was a seeker. In his correspondence, he talks about being a seeker, that he was never sure that he was finding what he was looking for, but he was always improving, incremental in his approach, always getting closer and closer and learning what he wanted to paint while painting it. Now, the author of Old Masters and Young Geniuses, and oh, by the way, isn't that just a great title for a book, Old Masters and Young Geniuses? Wouldn't you want to pick that up and read that? The author offers pretty convincing data that shows that the radical artists, like Picasso with cubism, those breakthroughs occur very early in a painter's life. He later extended his research, by the way, to include sculptors and novelists and other artistic professions, and it seems that that was true in all cases, that it was early in their lives that they would produce the status quo busting new techniques or methodologies that shaped their work ever after. Now, besides Picasso as a representative of that group, he also identifies Van Gogh and Seurat. Here's a quote from Seurat remarking to a friend, "They see poetry in what I have done. No, I apply my method, and that is all there is to it. I apply my method." Van Gogh wrote to his brother, "I'm in the midst of a complicated calculation, which results in a quick succession of canvases quickly executed but calculated long beforehand." Those painters and artistic professionals more are incremental. Those that felt that they were always approaching, always learning, always feeling like you never quite get there, tended to create their extraordinary work later in their careers. So along with Cézanne, representatives of that dynamic include Mondrian, who once said, "I don't want pictures. I want to find things out." And Auguste Renoir said, when he was explaining why it took so long for his paintings to develop, said, "At the start, I see my subject in a sort of a haze. I know perfectly well that what I shall see in it later is there all the time, but it is only after a while that it becomes apparent." And we're going to talk about how we tap into the power of both. These are two different techniques, creative techniques. I wonder if you're finding yourself in either one of them, but we're going to talk about the power of both when we come back from this break.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. I'm going to now bring the power of both. We're going to tap into the power of both. I'm going to remind us of what Picasso and Cézanne, how they execute. I'm going to see what we can't learn by bringing all that together. Because I think I do bring the power of both to my creative processes. I think I tend to start like Picasso, but then I think I tend to execute my work like Cézanne. I do try to make some sort of replicas and models and experiments before I begin. That was certainly true for my novels, where I would write character sketches, or if there was a piece of landscape that was really going to be important to the plot, I would write about it to see if I could capture that, make it come alive before I would get started. I would do some dialogue here. And then when I felt like, yes, this is coming together, then I would get started. And then I'm moving forward with my books. But then I'm always stepping back and refining. I'm writing 5 pages forward, but then I'm going back 7 pages and rewriting everything that I wrote. I'm writing 10 pages forward, then I'm going back 6 pages and rewriting everything that I wrote, always refining it, always trying to get closer to what it could be. In my entrepreneurial career, I was a Picasso form buster early on, right? That young geniuses model of coming up with radical different ideas about how to execute work early on. A couple of my companies were unlike anything that had come before them early in my career. But now in my entrepreneurial efforts, I'm much more like Cezanne. I'm discovering what it is I want to be doing as an entrepreneur next, right? I'm waiting for it to – not waiting for it, but allowing it to emerge. I'm being patient. I'm discovering what it is I should invest myself in for my next entrepreneurial endeavor. And here's some of the ways I think about it and talk about my creative actions that brings lots of power together, brings these different processes together. This comes under the heading of having an intentional bias for action. If you've been listening to the show, you know that's one of the three principles of a creatively entrepreneurial mindset is having an intentional bias for action. That's really important because it's reminding us to get started discovering. We're going to be much smarter as soon as we get started. We get much smarter as soon as we get started. First of all, our bodies become smarter. There's intelligence all throughout our bodies, and that gets engaged when you're moving. But then you're experiencing in the world when you get started, and so you're learning from those experiences. So you want to overcome the power of inertia with an intentionality that you're going to bring a bias for action. Here's some ways to think about your bias for action, and that's to fail fast, fail often, fail cheap. That way you get smart really, really fast when you fail fast, right? You want to find something that you can begin right away, but also something that you can complete very quickly so that you get that learning very quickly, that you can cycle through your experiment, through your model very quickly so you can fail fast. Fail often. I've learned that I've got to fail at least three times so I can triangulate my various learnings and really feel confident that I'm learning what I think I'm learning when I can find three different data points that I can combine to understand what is going on here. And then you want to certainly want to fail cheap if you're going to fail often. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, Picasso's 100 drawings are a great example of fail fast, fail often, fail cheap, right? He could execute those drawings very quickly. He could begin them very quickly and complete them very, very quickly and learn very quickly. He failed often, man, over 100. Boy, talk about having various perspectives on the project that he was eventually going to take on. He failed often and he failed cheap. A whole lot easier to do one of these little sketches that he did than it was to execute a full canvas. You know, we've talked about the creatively entrepreneurial behaviors of being generous, of being humble, of being playful. Boy, this is a great place to bring those behaviors because you're being intentional, right? You're being intentional. Failing often certainly requires humility, right? You've got to be humble if you're going to fail often. And being playful and being enthusiastic in your pursuit of beauty or of gracefulness or authenticity, boy, those are really good vibes to bring to an early discovery initiative. A great fail cheap strategy is do what you can where you are with what you have. That certainly minimizes risk. There's an opportunity to be playful there, right? I've just got these things at my disposal. Let me play around with them and see what I can learn. Another great bias for action perspective is to find friends fast. To find friends fast who can bring you different perspectives on what it is that you're starting to learn. Right? People who can you can leverage and who can leverage you. Folks who have been looking at this idea longer than you have and can share with you an experienced view. People who are just starting to look at it like you are and can bring you an uneducated, naive view. People who are younger than you, people who are older than you, people who are looking at this from a high perspective, people that are looking at this from a low perspective. And boy, here's where one of the core creatively entrepreneurial behaviors can really serve you, and that's generosity. Boy, if you're being generous when you're finding friends fast, as you're building your social capital network, right? That's finding friends fast is building your social capital. If you can be generous with them as you're engaging them, they're going to be generous in return, and you're going to have a network filled with people who are eager to be generous and helping you learn, helping you discover, and then eventually helping you execute. So let's revisit both to remind you how much you'll benefit from thinking about the contrasts between Picasso and Cezanne. There's this interesting fact. I find this so very interesting that a really very small percentage, like less than 10% of Cezanne's paintings were signed by him. because he never considered them finished, right? He never considered, he knew he could improve them, he knew he could make them better, so he didn't sign them declaring that they're done. Whereas Picasso, man, he knew what a finished product was going to look like before he began. He knew what finished looked like before he even got started. And so he not only signed all of his paintings, he frequently dated them, and with not just dated them, but added a time stamp on them. That's how he's certain he was that his painting was complete. So again, I think that this power of both, right, your ability to bring lots of different ideas, lots of different concepts together and learn from all of them and integrate all of them will really serve you well as you pull together what your creative process is going to be. We'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. At the top of the show, I said you were going to be getting a couple of perspectives on what it means to be creative. We've spent some time on this great book. What a great title, Old Masters and Young Geniuses by David Gallinson. Now I'm going to introduce you to Samantha Shadd. As I said, she's a screenwriter working on movies like the Gene Hackman film Class Action, also G.I. Jane and Mercy, and she worked on a number of L.A. Law episodes. She's written a couple of books on writing. The Right to Happiness, W-R-I-T-E, The Right to Happiness, is a favorite of mine. Here's a comment about a minute long from Samantha on being creative.
This is Samantha Shadd. I'm an author and a Hollywood screenwriter. I specialize now in creative writing and well-being, and I'm the author of two books on writing and happiness. If you're stuck, then the first thing to do is stop trying. That's right. Walk away from your desk or your painting or whatever and take a break. And even though this sounds counterintuitive, it's very important because creativity is not rational. So if you're stuck and you're trying to think through a problem, you're not going to find a creative answer. The other part of why taking a break is important is if you go for a walk, or walk in a garden, or take a bike ride, you disengage your executive network in your brain and engage something called the default mode network, which is what your brain is doing when it's not working on something. And the great thing about the default mode network is that's where your creativity lives. So by just walking outside and not trying, you allow and help your creativity to come through with a real answer.
Thank you very much, Samantha. Her great tip is really about helping you get into your subconscious creative mind. She doesn't use that phrase, but boy, she describes wonderfully how you get into your subconscious creative mind, and that's so important. It's so important that you are able to tap into your creative subconscious that I will do an episode soon that focuses on how and why it is really useful for you to get into your creative subconscious. Now I want to talk to you about one of my favorite creative exercises for you to do. One of my favorite creative exercises for you to do, I call the 30-day creative action program, or a 30-day cap. 30-day creative action program, a 30-day cap. And here it's simple. Every day for 30 days, you do one of two things. You either do something that you do habitually in a totally different fashion, or you do something you've never done before. I brush my teeth with my right hand. When I'm engaged in a 30-day cap, that day I'm going to brush my teeth with my left hand. The next day, I might do the following behavior. I usually sleep with my head on the south side of the bed. Tonight, as part of my 30-day cap, with my partner's permission, I'm going to sleep with my head on the north side of the bed. So I find a behavior that I do habitually, and I find a whole new way to do it. Or that day, you can do something you've never done before. I love to cook, but I've never taken on the challenge of doing a fancy French meal, right? If today I decided I was going to make this haute cuisine dinner that would be an example of something I have never done before. One of my Duke students' favorites, boy, more than one student used this as an example of something they had never done before. Stand in line in a coffee shop, turn around and introduce yourself to the person that's standing behind you and offer to buy them a cup of coffee, something that they had never done before. Research shows, folks, that your divergent discovery skills, your ability to find lots and lots and lots of options, unusual, unique, original options for the problem you're trying to solve, that increases by as much as 80% when you 80% when you complete a 30-day CAP. Your convergent creation ability, I've got all these ideas now that I've discovered in my divergent discovery process. Now I need to bring these ideas together into the thing I'm going to do. That's your convergent creation abilities. Those improve by roughly 25 to 30%. So I would strongly recommend. Now, my Duke students would do this for 30 days. They'd have to write me a 5-page paper. Time and time again in that paper, I would read that, boy, within 10 days to 2 weeks, they were already feeling a great change. The Duke seniors would talk about how they're now walking across the campus and seeing it in the way that they hadn't seen it in the last couple of years. They felt more like first-year students in all the original fresh impressions that they were getting. Now, what you're doing with a 30-day CAP, folks, is every day a little bit, you're kicking the status quo in the butt. Right? By doing something differently than you used to do, by doing something you've never done before, you're intentionally kicking the status quo in the butt just a little bit, right? And the accumulated effect of all those challenges to the status quo can have a real profound impact on your creative processing. Again, Carl Nordgren at creativepopulist.com. Please send me any thoughts that you have. We are running a summer camp. My partner and I are in this new entrepreneurial endeavor that I'm discovering. You'll find information about the summer camp, Who I Am Becoming for High School Students, on the Chapelboro website under current events. Thanks very much. Look forward to talking to you next week.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren.